This is Night Call, nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight, abortion, should it be legalized? With guest, attorney Harriet Pilper. Night Call is an open forum. Speak for yourself. Ask your own questions. Call Night Call Collect from anywhere in North America. From the East and Midwest, call 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Just before we get into our show, our thanks once again to our very good friend Bill Richards, who always takes care of beautiful business for us when we have to be away. And we were in Washington for last night as well as today attending the Religious Heritage Conference. And we were one of the recipients of an award on the basis of Night Call, along with our producer, as well as our executive producer, Mr. Nelson Price, Mr. Ben Logan. Now, tonight we're going to get into a very provocative and very controversial area. We had discussed abortion some months ago with Dr. Robert Hall, and tonight we'll be talking with an attorney. We'll be talking about the law, whether or not it should be legal, and what are some of the ramifications of it. And I think tonight we'll also extend the courtesy to some of our listeners, for those of you who might have a question in this area that you might feel you will not want to give your name. We will accept the anonymous calls from you for tonight. Is abortion murder? Or is it just a special form of birth control, and should we always forbid it? Or should we permit it only in the hardship cases of rape, incest, or the probability of a deformed child? Or should we allow it whenever a woman wants it, on the grounds that she knows better than anyone else when she is ready for motherhood? Well, before we ask Mrs. Harriet Pilpel, who is calling in from New York City, to respond to these pressing questions, let's take a moment out and look at some of the facts. While about 8,000 therapeutic abortions are performed a year in hospitals, a million or so are done illegally. That is, one out of every five pregnancies is terminated. And of course, if we examine who are the women receiving legal abortions, well, here in New York City, 93% were performed on white patients, while over 56% of deaths associated with abortion were black women, compared to 20% who are white. So let's talk to our guest tonight, Mrs. Pilpel. She's a lawyer and a member of the National Board of Directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, as well as the National Board of Directors of Planned Parenthood. She's also a counsel to the Association for the Study of Abortion. So to our Night Call listeners, we certainly hope that we'll find out from you how you feel about abortion and the law. Mrs. Pilpel, good evening, ma'am.
Good evening.
And thank you so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Let's begin our conversation by asking first, is there a need to legalize abortion? And if you don't mind me kind of piggybacking it, why, and why are we having difficulty in getting it legal?
Well, that's quite a series of questions. When you say, is there a need to legalize abortion, I think I should make clear in the first instance that abortion is legal. Some abortion is legal in every one of the 50 states of the United States. It is not an illegal procedure, and as you said, 8,000, some people say 10,000, abortions are openly performed in hospitals every year in this country.
May I stop you for just a moment? When you say some abortion, what do you mean by that?
Well, I was going to say that in every state of the union, it is legal to perform an abortion to save the life of the mother. Now, that sounds like a very restrictive provision, and in many states, it's interpreted restrictively. However, in many other states, and in some parts of some states, it is not interpreted so strictly, so that abortions are often done in situations where the ordinary layman might not think that they could be characterized as being needed to prevent the loss of life of the mother. The fact is that the laws presently on the books, which do permit abortion to save the life of the mother in all 50 states, are completely ambiguous, and there are almost as many interpretations of the law in each state as there are hospitals and doctors who are acting under it. The courts have not helped very much because they have said that the probability of death can be just a possibility, really, that the chances need not be certain and that the possibility of death need not be imminent. But how certain or how imminent, nobody really has any idea. So one of the main objections to the abortion laws in the United States is not only that they're restrictive, and I'll get to that in a moment, but that they're terribly vague and uncertain in their application. As a matter of fact, for that reason alone, a very strong case can be made for their being unconstitutional. In our legal system, if people have to guess whether when they do certain things they're violating the law or not, that in itself is a reason for declaring that the law is invalid. In the opinion of many people, including myself, the abortion laws in most of the states, the ones that permit abortion only to save the life of the mother, are probably unconstitutionally vague. Now, you said, I think your second part of your piggyback question was, in what circumstances should abortion be legal?
Right.
Well, obviously it should be legal in all the situations in which it is legal, namely to save the life of the mother, whatever that means, and in many instances it means something quite broad. In addition, we now have 9 states that have adopted rather much more broadly defined abortion laws. And all of these laws, with the exception of one, permit abortion not only to save the life of the mother, but also to protect her mental or physical health, also to avoid the birth of probably defective offspring, and also in cases of rape or incest. I said all except one because one of the states that's passed a new law is California, and in that state, the ground of the probability of defective offspring is not included in the statute. In some states, and most particularly and most recently in the state of Oregon, a bill has passed both houses of the legislature, which makes clear that in considering whether a woman's mental, physical health is threatened, consideration may be given to her actual or reasonably foreseeable environment, which obviously takes into account her total circumstances. Now, that is the legal picture as it exists today. The third part of your question, I think, had to do with what did I think the law ought to be. I think that all the abortion laws should be repealed and that abortion should be treated like any other medical procedure. We have in every state a Medical Practices Act, which defines who may do medical procedures, namely doctors, and which defines penalties for improprieties or wrongdoing in connection with the practice of medicine. This code of medical practice has proved entirely adequate in governing all phases of medical practice, including the most serious operations like lobotomy, for example. I think that the code of medical practice is equally capable of governing the question of abortion. So in answer to your question as to what do I think should be the law, in my opinion, the law should be repealed. I should like to conclude by saying that this is not a very radical opinion that I'm voicing. It is, for example, the opinion of the American Baptist Convention at a resolution adopted in 1968. It is the opinion of the Universalist Unitarian Church. It's the opinion of Planned Parenthood. It's the opinion of the American Public Health Association, and many, many others. The medical associations have almost without exception come out for very liberalized laws as to abortion, and they came out long before most other people realized the necessity for them. That includes the American Medical Association.
Well, if we estimate that there are 8,000 therapeutic abortions, and if we also estimate that 1 million or so were done, as we said, illegally at the beginning of the show, and we kind of, or we accept these figures as reasonably accurate, where is the hang-up? What area are we confused in terms of whether or not abortion should be legal or illegal? Is it a religious question? Is it a moral question?
I repeat, abortion is legal now in all states, in some cases, as I just described. Abortion has been posed as a medical issue, as a legal issue, as a moral issue, as a social issue. Actually, there is only one group in the United States of any consequence that is against changing the abortion laws. In a way, they're not even against changing. They change them and make them even stricter than they are. And that is the Roman Catholic Church. It is the view of the Roman Catholic Church that abortion, in no circumstances, is justified. That means that they take a much more extreme position than do any of the laws in our 50 states. They believe that it is wrong to terminate a pregnancy from the moment of conception on. I would fight vigorously for their right to hold this belief. And doctors who are Roman Catholic should not, of course, be compelled to participate in any abortion procedures. But I also would defend vigorously the right of the rest of the population not to be governed by laws which reflect this particular, what I would call, theological point of view. In this connection, I think it would be appropriate to cite a statement made by Cardinal Cushing some years ago in connection with birth control. As you probably know, many Catholics are against birth control, but by and large, in the United States, they have felt that that is their conscience and that the rest of the population should be free to follow its own conscience. In that connection, Cardinal Cushing said that Catholics do not need the support of law to enforce their convictions and that they have no right to use law to impose their convictions on others. It seems to me that if the Roman Catholic Church were not opposing changes or repeal of the abortion laws, they would be being changed or repealed at a much more rapid pace. However, the changes that have taken place in 9 states in the last 2 years indicates that we are moving very rapidly in any case.
Now, Of those who favor abortion, or favor a law for abortion, do they favor it because they see it as an effective birth control measure?
No, I think not by and large, because no one would advocate abortion being considered a birth control measure in the first instance. Birth control is now of age. We have a variety of contraceptives. And hopefully we are going to make them increasingly available to our entire population. It always comes as somewhat of a surprise to me when I recollect that recent studies have shown that about 5 million women in the United States are still without effective access to birth control. When that access is made possible, as it, I hope, will be by federal and state and municipal funds, as well as by the private work done by Planned Parenthood, then the need for abortion in a number of cases may not exist. Although, however, I do not recommend abortion as a method of birth control, it is, in fact, the most widely used method of birth control, not only in the United States, but in the entire world. And it always has been. Even if we had effective access to birth control in the United States and elsewhere in the world, we would still have cases where abortions would be desperately needed. Sometimes contraceptives don't work. Sometimes people forget to use them. And sometimes people who very badly want a child so that the wife becomes pregnant find out, for example, that she's contracted German measles and that there is a very high probability that she'll have a defective child. So in all those situations, you will continue to need abortion basically as a backup birth control method. I hope I've answered your question.
Now, when it comes to abortion, to whom or on whose shoulders does the responsibility lie? Is it the doctor's choice or is it the mother's choice?
You don't ask that question with reference, when I say you, I'm not being personal. I mean, no one really asks that question. With respect to other medical procedures, it is assumed with reference to something which is to be done by a doctor that the decision will be made by the patient and the doctor. We don't have boards passing on whether operations should be performed, whether they're optional operations in the sense that doctors say you don't have to have this, but it would be a good idea, or whether they're entirely elective operations, such as plastic surgery operations and so forth. We don't make any issue of any of this. But somehow, when it comes to this one single procedure of abortion, we ask the question. The question is always asked. The answer is that if abortion were under the code of medical practice and treated the same as any other medical procedure, the decision whether or not an abortion would be done in a particular case would be by the woman and the physician jointly.
Have we reached a point in our society today that a woman who undergoes an abortion leaves the hospital and friends or relatives ask her what her reasons were in the hospital? Are women able to say today, and it's socially accepted, that I had an abortion?
I don't think women generally talk about matters of great intimacy that affect them, but I don't think it's because of guilt. I think it's because of feelings of privacy. Many women have what are called spontaneous abortions or miscarriages. They don't go around casually telling everybody about it. I think we are gradually approaching a point where women would be no more or less reluctant to say they had an induced abortion than to say they had an involuntary abortion, provided our laws were such that when they said it, they were not in some way suggesting that they might have been guilty of an illegal act.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation is on abortion, and our guest calling in from New York City is Mrs. Harriet Pilpel. We'll return following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Harriet Pilper after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to guest lawyer Harriet Pilper about abortion law reform. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Well, welcome. Mr. Manners calling in from Oxford, Ohio, is here at Night Call over WMUB. Mr. Manners?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir.
How are you doing, Mr. Shields?
Fine, thank you. Your question, sir.
My question is that I realize this abortion problem is a very sticky question, but my question is that if a doctor or the people involved in an abortion can't decide whether that baby, or let's not even get that it, is alive or dead, how could one morally make the decision to either kill or continue the life of the baby? For example, even say in the case of a rape, now that baby, we're not sure it's dead. Now the Catholics hold it's alive. Now, but we don't necessarily have to agree with them, but then we're not sure it's alive or dead. So how do we make the decision? And if the baby is alive, how can we possibly take that on our shoulders to, for example, kill this baby if it might be alive, although we can't prove it?
Well, Mrs. Pilpel is not a doctor, but...
Well, I'd be glad to ask.
All right.
In the first place, it's not a baby. At least I gather we're talking about a sterilized egg or a fetus, and I think that it's incorrect to call it a baby. The ovum, the egg, is also alive, and the sperm is alive, but needless to say, we don't hesitate to kill them. Every piece of flesh is alive in that sense. What you're saying is, how do we know whether or not this is a human being? And I would say that it is pretty firmly established, both legally and medically, that a fertilized egg is a zygote or a fetus, but is not a human being. There are many cases that have had this question fall to their attention in the courts in one way or another, and it might be interesting to note what the highest court in New York State said just about, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I think I'm quoting correctly when I say that that court, which is the Court of Appeals, our highest court, said and I'm quoting now, the law has never considered the unborn fetus as having a separate juridical existence or a legal personality or identity until it sees the light of day, that is born alive. So that I think the answer to the gentleman from Ohio is that there is no reason to consider that there is a baby when there exists a fertilized egg of anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 days or 5 weeks duration.
Mm-hmm. Well, for example, if you had a babies have been born, for example, I believe it's 7 months, and I can remember a doctor one time on a program I saw said that he had committed abortions right up until 9 months. Well, you still wouldn't think this is a baby.
No, the definition of abortion in most medical dictionaries is the termination of pregnancy prior to what they call viability. Now, I'm not a doctor, as Dale said. My impression is that viability is somewhere around the fourth or fifth month. After that, I don't think it's an abortion. It's the induction of premature labor, or it's a cesarean section or something. And my answer to your question was directed toward that definition of abortion, namely the termination of pregnancy prior to viability.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much for your answer and your time.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Mrs. Covington is calling in from New York City. She's hearing my call over WLIB-FM. Mrs. Covington?
Yes?
Good evening, ma'am.
Hello.
Your question?
Well, I don't think it's more or less a statement than a question, but I think that if they could urge more women to take birth control, I think the percentage of abortions would be eliminated, except for the cases, like if the mother caught German measles or extreme emergencies, you know, and in such cases of illness in the mother or something like that.
There's no question that the best cure for the abortion problem is birth control, and I thoroughly agree with you. I said before that to the extent that we have effective contraceptives and make them available to our whole population, the abortion problem will tend to become that much less. However, as you yourself have just pointed out, there will be these cases where women discover, even when they wanted to be pregnant, that they should not go on with the pregnancy for German measles or other reasons. And there will also be cases where contraceptives will not work until we have the perfect contraceptive, which we really don't now. And there will also be cases where women, being human beings, will make mistakes or forget to do whatever it is they are doing for birth control. Abortion will therefore remain, I think, a necessity, but I agree entirely with you that the incidence and the need for it should be much less.
And then there's the fact that even if the mother did catch German measles, or like in the case, well, German measles, just point blank, but how can the doctor be sure that the baby's going to be deformed and at a certain point he's going to terminate the life? I mean, you can understand you wouldn't want a deformed child, but then you don't know if the child is really going to come out deformed or normal, and in that way it's hard to tell, too.
Many women feel that if there is any substantial chance of a deformed child, they would rather not take that chance, both for their own sake and for the sake of the child. With reference to German measles, a recent study done in Texas indicates that after a period of years, a number of babies who were studied all were defective in cases where the mothers had German measles. Most of the studies done on German measles cases examine the baby when the baby's first born or a year or two after birth. But this particular study went through 10 years and found at the end of 10 years that there was not a normal child in the group of children whose mothers had had German measles. In other words, there's a high probability. Mm-hmm. Many women in that situation will feel as Mrs. Sherry Finkfein did some years ago. At that time, she had, I remember, either three or four children. She became pregnant. She wanted to be pregnant. She got German measles. She knew the chances were somewhere between 30 and 50% that the baby, she didn't get German measles. She took thalidomide, a drug, which had been shown to be very harmful to the development of the fetus. And she knew the chances were high that the fetus would be deformed. And as she said to me and on radio and television, She wanted to have another child, but she wanted that child to have a chance in life. When she was denied abortion in Arizona, she went to Sweden. She had the abortion there, and an examination of the fetus indicated that it would have been very badly deformed. She then came back to the United States and has had at least one child since. It seems to me that what she did reflects what most women would want to do in the circumstances.
Yeah, I guess so.
Thank you for calling, Ms. Covenant.
Thank you.
From one end of New York, Mr. Stone is hearing Night Call over WRUN, I believe it is. Mr. Stone?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
What was the time limit that you put on now when you would induce abortion? First, was it 5 months or whatever?
Yeah, well, there are different, in the various new statutes, there are different periods prescribed. I believe they range from 20 to about 26 or 28 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Now, after that, you don't think it should be allowed? Is that your position?
Well, I didn't say that. I said that abortion, as I understood it, abortion is defined in medical dictionaries as being the intentional termination of pregnancy up to viability, and that after that... Pardon me? And that after that, it isn't an abortion. It's something else. I'm not saying that there are not circumstances in the sixth or seventh month where an abortion might be indicated, but it wouldn't be an abortion. And the fact is, of course, that when we talk about making abortion more available, we are talking about the early weeks and months of pregnancy.
The reason I asked is this, and this is something that someone interested in civil rights, I think, would be very concerned about. How do you prove rape or incest? If you're going to have a trial, first of all, you might not want to have a trial because you'd be putting the woman or perhaps a young girl through something of a dreadful ordeal. But how are you going to prove it? You're going to prove it supposedly with a trial, and you can't always rush a trial through, you know, and say, well, we've got to have it over by such and such a day because we can't terminate the pregnancy after that.
Well, there are special procedures in the new laws in the various states that I mentioned, California and others, which require a report as to rape or incest to be made to the prosecuting attorney in the area, and which require him to investigate, if he wishes to investigate, immediately. There is no trial, and there are procedures whereby the entire matter can be adjudicated. I mean, it isn't even adjudicated. It can be determined within a week or less. I want to make my position clear, though. I don't approved of these laws, except insofar as they're better than what we have. I said before that I thought the abortion laws should be repealed.
I agree with you.
And that abortion should be a matter of decision of the woman with her physician. I agree with you that to require a woman who has been raped or has been the victim of incest to have to report it to anybody, including a doctor, is just making a terrible situation, in a sense, more terrible in that aspect.
Suppose now that there is a trial, the individual, the man who supposedly impregnated her, is brought to trial. Now, if she has been allowed to have an abortion, he comes into court with a presumption of guilt, doesn't he?
Well, there is no trial. There is a sort of informal investigation, and there is no need to make anything public at that time.
No, I mean, suppose that she says she's been raped and the man is brought to trial. And in this case, she wants a trial. And so finally they decide that there's, you know, cause and that there ought to be a trial. Now, the fact that she's been allowed an abortion, doesn't that prejudice the case against the alleged rapist before he even sets foot?
Well, it may. In all the research I've done in this field, I haven't come across any case in which there was a prosecution for rape connected with an abortion. That doesn't mean it isn't possible. Actually, the number of abortions for rape are extremely small anyhow. There are not that many rape cases which result in impregnation, which result in an abortion being formally petitioned for. The problem is an acute one, but I think it does not affect very many people. If a man is indicted for rape, first of all, he's got to be indicted. Second of all, he's got to be tried. And third of all, if he's convicted, it's got to be by a jury for having done something beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mr. Stone, thank you for calling, sir.
I hope you stay stay on the air, Dale.
Thank you very much, sir.
Bye.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight, abortion law reform is our conversation with our guest, Mrs. Harriet Pilpel. We'll return following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Dell Shields and guest Harriet Pilper after station identification.
What do I really want? Well, the same things any man wants, black or white. I want a decent job. The same chance as any man to better myself, to get ahead. I want a home my wife won't be ashamed of. I want our kids to grow up as proud of being black as of being American. I want to be able to give them what they want, and maybe a little extra. If I don't get all the things I want, it should be because I failed, pure and simple, not because I'm black. I want nothing more than anyone else, but nothing less either.
It isn't easy to get by in the city these days, for blacks or whites. Our cities need help, your help. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder. Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York. Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to guest lawyer Harriet Pilper about abortion law reform. Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Again, Dell Shields.
From Lexington, Kentucky, Mr. Pratt is hearing Night Call over WBKY. Mr. Pratt?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
I called to ask of the guest two questions. The first question is probably twofold, and I guess she'll be able to answer it in regard to the two different issues here, two different questions here. First, what is the national organization working for the legalization of abortion, and can you in any way estimate the effect it's had at this point and effect that you would approximate that it would have in the future?
It's awfully hard to tell when there's a social movement afoot, when a social change is desperately needed and wanted, how much an organization has contributed to it. There are, so far as I know, two abortion reform organizations now in existence on a national level. One is called the Abortion Reform Association, and its headquarters are here in New York. And the other is called, I think, the Association for the Repeal of the abortion laws, and it has headquarters, or at least it had a conference recently in Chicago. It probably has an address in New York, and a number of people in California are active. So those are the two that I know. Then there is a third organization which is not engaged in legislative work, but is engaged in studying the entire problem and trying to make the facts about the problem available to the American people. And that's called the Association for the Study of Abortion, and that is also located in New York City.
And the second question I would like to ask is, I know that there are a lot of makeshift fighters for the legalization of abortion, and I call them makeshift because they carry on illegal activities, you know, in regard to abortion and carry on illegal abortions. Do you think that this is the most appropriate means of, say, you know, legalizing abortion or saving women's lives and so forth, or what do you feel is the most important means of challenging today's laws and possibly bringing about new laws?
There are several ways in which laws are changed in this country, I guess in most countries. One is by changing the law through legislation, and that's the way we usually think of. Another is by simply disregarding the law. And to a certain extent, that's happened with respect to the abortion problem. If, as Dale said, and as I also believe, there are 1 million abortions or more performed outside of hospitals in the United States every year, it is clear that there is widespread civil disobedience in this field, and that one of the reasons why some people are in favor of changing the laws is because the laws are not being enforced, and that people are violating them in such a way as to inculcate disrespect for all law. There is, however, a third method, and that is presently, I think, being quite effective, or at least it has promise, and that is the method of test cases. That method has been used in the birth control field, and where you challenge a statute or its application, one of two things can happen which will really affect the whole structure of your law. One, the court can interpret the law in such a way so that although it appears to say that only to save the life of the woman can an abortion be performed, actually that must be reasonably interpreted in light of the fact that anything which adversely affects a woman's health also adversely affects her life. So you can have liberal judicial interpretations which really do change the law in a sense. Also, you can have happen what happened with the birth control law in Connecticut, where after many years we succeeded in persuading the United States Supreme Court that that law was unconstitutional. That was several years ago, and there has been no anti-birth control law in Connecticut or really anywhere else since that decision. So in answer to your question, I think every one of these methods is necessary when you attack an evil like our present abortion situation. One, you try to change the laws through legislation. Two, you let people know that you have a situation here like prohibition where there's such widespread violation of the law that the law itself has become an evil even if it wasn't in the first place. And three, you do bring judicial test cases with doctors and patients who are willing to stand up and be counted, which often result either in liberal interpretations of the law or in holdings that the laws are unconstitutional.
Didn't mean in any way to condemn those people that carry on those activities. It's just my feelings that it needs to be more open and in the field of civil disobedience so that the laws will be changed and will be challenged within the court system, because I'm not too optimistic about the legislative system.
Well, yet you must remember that non-legislators have done something.
Yes, no, I'm optimistic that it will do something, but there's a greater need than, you know, what they're willing to pass on.
Well, I think if we follow all three of the methods I mentioned, we will be making progress, and we really are making progress. It's not rapid enough when you consider the millions of women who year after year are forced to go to backstreet butchers for an operation which should be a very simple and a very safe one. On the other hand, when you consider that no laws had really been passed to liberalize in the abortion situation until 2 years ago, and that none have been passed since, I would say we were moving.
Mr. Pratt, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Out to Indianapolis, Indiana, Mrs. Birdsall is hearing that call of WFBM. Mrs. Birdsall?
Hello, Dale.
Good evening, ma'am.
I'd like to speak to the doctor, the lawyer, I mean.
She's on the line.
Hello, I'm going to talk about, it's not exactly abortion, but it's concerning being sterilized. I have Rh negative blood, and I am now in my fourth pregnancy that my doctor told me definitely not to have another child, because my third child just barely got under the line of not of having to have its blood transfused. And although I'm not considering abortion to get rid of this child, because I'll accept it, I want to be sterilized. And my sister, who lives in Ohio, has the same condition. And when she had her fourth child, its blood had to be 85% of its blood had to be transferred. And she asked to have her fallopian tubes tied so she could not be pregnant again. But they would not do it. They said she had to have two children in the condition that. Which this will make my second child in that condition with the antibodies so high. And they would not do that to her, and now she may have to go through another pregnancy. And I don't think that they've got any right to, I consider that a breach against my civil rights. What do you think that the law should be changed there?
Oh, I agree with you entirely that the refusal to perform a sterilization operation in these circumstances is a violation of your rights. However, it's a violation which is being performed by doctors and not because of any law.
There's
no law in the United States, in any of the 50 states, which prohibits sterilization. As a matter of fact,
and they lied to my sister.
And in 48 states, including Ohio and Indiana, there is no law which compels the result that your sister encountered. There are two states, Connecticut and Utah, where the doctors insist on a show, I mean, where the law requires a showing of medical necessity. But you have medical necessity, so even in those states, you would be entitled to sterilization.
Well, and she said that, according to what they told her, you had to have two children like that. Now, I think that if she wanted it done after her fourth child, with just one having to have its blood transfused, that it should have been allowed
there
to...
There is no question. I suggest that if you want further information about this, you communicate with an organization in New York called the Association for Voluntary Sterilization. I don't have their address handy, but you would be able to find it, I'm sure.
Okay.
Association for Voluntary Sterilization, and they will tell you what the law is, and they may even be able to help you in general.
And there's one other thing. If her doctor was against this on religious reasons, shouldn't he have been ethical and told her in advance so she could have sought help somewhere else?
I think he should.
Well,
I have thought about this problem a great deal, and as I said earlier on this program, I don't think that a physician who is against abortion or sterilization or anything else on religious grounds should be required to participate in it.
Well,
but I do think he should be required, and the new Oregon law so states, he should be required to state to the patient that the reason why he is not proceeding with whatever the thing is a religious or moral reason, and therefore give her the opportunity to consult another physician.
Well, I think that's 100% right. And my doctor warned me that my child, that I will be lucky to bear my child alive, and I may have to have it, you know, in prematurely, maybe even at the seventh month, which it would, of course, its health, chances are it would not be as healthy as if I could carry it the full 9 months. And I don't want to have to go through this again. And I think that if, you know, doctors or anybody else should have any right to tell me what to do with my body. Thank you.
Thank you
for calling, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mrs. Pilpel, are there any other reasons that the doctor might give for his unwillingness to perform the operation?
I think there may be some doctors who adhere to some other, what I call, minority points of view. I should make clear that the Roman Catholic Church is not the only group. I said it was the only major group. The Orthodox Jews, I have a recollection, are against abortion except in extreme cases. And there are some other, what I call minor, not because they're minor in any sense of importance, but minor in the sense of numbers. There are also, I guess, although I've never met any, some doctors who adhere to the opinion for one reason or another that in some cases a woman would do better to have the child than to have the abortion. I can't really speak for them. Psychiatric studies have indicated that the bad psychological consequences of abortion are nowhere near as great as the bad psychological consequences of having an unwanted baby. And the American Psychiatric Association, in a questionnaire, went something like 88% in favor of liberalizing the laws as to abortion. So I'm afraid I'm not the person to give you the answer on that. All the opposition that I have encountered has been on religious, what I consider religious grounds, almost exclusively by Roman Catholic doctors or laymen.
Now, when we talk about abortion law reform, now, are we asking, or is the question being asked to eliminate all of the laws pertaining to abortion, or are we asking for a uniform law?
I am asking that all the laws relating to abortion as a special problem be repealed, and that abortion take its place with all other medical and surgical procedures and be governed by the general codes of medical practice. There would seem to be no need for any special laws as to abortion, any more than there is a need for special laws as to sterilization, and there aren't any. As a matter of fact, many people might think sterilization is a more irrevocable kind of step to take than abortion, and yet there are only two states in the Union which impose any limitations on voluntary sterilization. I should add to that that there are some states which have prescribed specific steps that people have to go through to get sterilization. They have to register their intention, and they have a week's waiting period or something like that. The purpose of those laws, however, is not to discourage sterilization. It's to make sure that people who ask for sterilization know exactly what they're asking for. Coming back to abortion, most of the people who study the problem have come to the conclusion that women will have abortions whether they're legal or illegal, and that only by repealing the laws can you take the women out of the realm of illegality. There have been studies which tend to show that the number of abortions in any community at any time is pretty constant, and that the only difference is whether they're legal or illegal. In other words, if a community has 10,000 or a state has 10,000 abortions in 1 year, the chances are it'll have the same the next year, and whether they're legal or illegal will depend on the law, but it will not affect the total number of abortions.
Abortion law reform is our conversation tonight with our guest calling in from New York City, attorney Harriet Pilpel. We'll return following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and tonight's guest after station identification.
Social Security is not just for older people, it protects people of all ages. Almost 4 million young people get cash benefits every month because one of their parents has become disabled, died, or retired. In fact, 9 out of 10 young people have this protection today. And young people who are just starting their careers get Social Security protection for themselves and their families almost immediately. The young worker and his family are protected during his working years in case he becomes disabled or dies. And at the same time, he is building up his Social Security credit toward the day he retires. Social Security is definitely not just for older people. It is a program providing income protection for workers of all ages. If you would like more information about Social Security and what it means to the young worker and his family, write, visit, or phone your Social Security office. The people there will be glad to answer your questions.
Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to tonight's Night Call guest. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Our next Night Call listener is calling in from Norwalk, Connecticut. His name is Mr. Drought. Mr. Drought?
Hi.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
See, you have a wonderful program, Del.
Thank you very much, sir.
My pass is United Press International and Associated Press. Harriet?
Yes.
Hi, Harriet. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Listen, I wanted you to discuss the idea that perhaps if abortion were too easily able to come by, a lot of things wouldn't happen people find it possible to have happen or survive. You remember when we were trying to get our royalties from Avon and the Hearst Corporation on Memories of a Humble Man and The Secret and Mover, and we had a baby. We're about to have a baby, Alexander Drought, and you found it impossible to use the legal structure to get us any money. We would have had an abortion if it had been easily able to come by, and we find that we're very happy and wonderfully delighted with the baby that we in fact had, Alexander Drought.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the question is, but if you are saying that you think people should think many times before they have an abortion, if the only reason that they want to have an abortion is because they're temporarily in financial difficulties, I would agree with that.
I think that it's
part of a responsible physician to help people arrive at responsible decisions.
You would agree that it might be better to let Avon of the Hearst Corporation go ahead and dunk itself and have the baby, huh?
Well, I don't know about the first part, but
I You're funny, Harriet. I always get a big kick out of listening to you liberal people out there espouse human causes. You know, anybody who's ever had any experience with you, real realizes that you're not really for the human being, but that you represent probably the worst interests of the monopolies. You work for Greenbaum, Wolf, and Ernst, don't you?
I remember that term, Dale, but I don't really think this is relevant to what we're
Mr. Drought, thank you so very much for calling, sir. I will take our next call from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mr. Roberts is calling in. He's hearing night call. Well, I don't have the station, all right. Mr. Roberts?
Yes?
Good evening, sir.
Hi, is this Dale?
Yes, it is, sir.
Okay. Can I speak to Mrs. Topel?
She's on the line, sir.
Okay, my question, Mr. Topel, concerns thalidomide. Do you remember the thalidomide scare?
Yes, I referred to Sherry Finkbein a little while back.
Uh-huh. Well, during that period, anyway, I was in England, and I followed many of the press, the letters in the press coming from various bodies, and such as, the church and the medical bodies, concerning the ethical and moral aspects as to whether you should terminate conception during because of this pill. And they argued backwards and forth for quite a long while. And finally, one letter came in, and it came from a number of children from a children's hospital for the deformed. And the letter simply stated that I'm glad we're not dead. Now,
personal feelings would be that it is up to the woman, in conjunction with her doctor, to decide whether in those circumstances she wants to go ahead and have a child or not. And if she wants to, I certainly would let her. And if she doesn't want to, I certainly wouldn't force her to. I think compulsory pregnancy and compulsory motherhood is a very dangerous thing to force on people. I even think it's unconstitutional.
It's unconstitutional.
I think it is.
Uh-huh.
One of the reasons I advance in that direction is that when this country was first founded and settled, abortion before quickening was not a crime at common law, either in England or in the United States. And for many, many centuries, nobody thought that terminating a pregnancy early in the pregnancy was a bad thing. It was only in the 19th century when abortion became widespread, and before we had antiseptics and anesthesia and other kinds of protections, that the abortion in the early months of pregnancy was made illegal in this country. It was made illegal primarily because at that time it was a dangerous operation. Today, performed by a physician in a hospital, abortion is less risky than childbirth itself. As a matter of fact, it's even less risky than having a routine tonsillectomy. So that the reason why the law was changed to make abortion illegal in the last century no longer exists.
I see what you mean, but I was thinking of the possibility if a group of children who were themselves deformed wanted to live, they said they have the rights to live.
Well, I do not believe that a fertilized egg of several days, weeks, or even a few months standing has any rights, either in our law or should have any rights as far as a matter of justice or morality is concerned. I am much more interested in the welfare of those people who are alive, the mother, the other children who may be adversely affected, the general feeling in the family, etc. And I often wonder why the people who are so concerned about the rights of unborn children don't get a little bit more concerned about the rights of the children who are already here. As you know, there are many millions of children in the world today who are starving to death. There are many, there are 10,000 or more battered babies in the United States every year, etc. I feel we should concentrate on them and leave abortion, which is a decision for a woman and her doctor, in their hands. I think they can handle it.
Mr. Roberts, thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. Out to Lynn, Massachusetts, Mr. Hunt is hearing Night Call over WBUR. Mr. Hunt?
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. Where would the lady on your program draw the line on abortion?
What?
Number two, I'd like to ask her, does she believe that you'd have to be God to say that you would take the life of a child which has a soul?
Well, the second question she answered earlier, but would you qualify your first question? What do you mean by draw the line?
Well, would she consider giving an abortion to any girl that asked for this under any circumstance?
I don't think that I could add very much to what I said. I would say that any girl who asks for an abortion under any circumstances must go to a doctor who has studied for 4 years and done a residency and an internship, and if the doctor and she feel that the pregnancy should be terminated, then I think it should be terminated. I would like to point out that it is usually not a girl in the usual sense for whom this is a problem. The overwhelming majority of abortions in the United States are performed on married women who already have several children, who are living with their husbands, and who feel that physically, emotionally, financially, morally, they should not have another child.
I'd like to say one more thing. I have, as a father of six children, and I'm so glad that we had all six. I'm so glad. They're wonderful to have.
I think many people like to have large families, and one of the things that all of us should bear in mind all the time is the necessity for freedom of choice in this whole area. You chose to have six children.
Yes,
and
I did.
And I'm
non-Catholic.
And you're happy with them.
Very happy, and I'm non-Catholic, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't, but if someone else wants to have only one or two children, you presumably would let them make that decision. I should add that with the population problem the way it is today in the world, it is important for all of us to realize that some curtailment of birth should be decided upon by us voluntarily.
But I can't see why a doctor should have the last word, anything like this. You say a child is defective.
I didn't say the doctor should have the last word. I said the doctor and the patient have the last word.
But I think so also that we're forgetting one important point, and that is that a million or more abortions are performed every year illegally in this country.
I do know one thing, that if a child is not just correct, that nature takes care of it in just about every case.
Well, there are an awful lot of deformed and hopelessly defective children
in institutions
and at home.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and our guest tonight has been Mrs. Harriet Pilpel in our conversation, Abortion Law Reform. And Mrs. Pilpel, we want to thank you so very much for being our guest tonight.
Thanks for asking me.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Good night.
Night Call, tomorrow night, same time, same station. Do we get what we pay for with Del Shields and guest Senator Philip Hart? When you buy a car, do you get $2,000 worth of automobile or $500 worth of planned obsolescence? What about insurance, appliances, medical care, furniture, even groceries? Why do some groups pay more than others? Do we get what we pay for with Senator Philip Hart? Listen tomorrow night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.